morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. This is episode number 123. Today is February 6, 2026. Starting out as a sunny and cool day, with promises of a little warmth above 50 degrees later in the day. The last few weeks have certainly been interesting. We started out January with a couple of weeks at our favorite St. George's Island, Florida. We had mild temps and lots of nice sun and seafood, only to return to Nashville for record cold weather and a monumental ice storm. The power supply to the house was damaged by a falling limb from a white pine, so we were out of our house for over a week, waiting to be repaired and reconnected. We are grateful for friends and neighbors who accommodated us. We have several trees that will need to be removed and a lot of cleanup to do. On today's episode, we have something special for anyone interested in the outdoors and bird dogs. I'm joined by former State Park Ranger, Park Manager, and Boykin Spaniel aficionado, Alicia O'Dell. Most recently, she served as Park Manager at Realfoot Lake. We will hear about her distinguished career and love for wildlife, wild places, and Boykin Spaniels. Alicia has for several years been posting interesting content on social media under the name Boykins and Boat. Recently, she has launched a new podcast called Wild Hearts and Home Fires. She intends to share stories and insights about experiences in the outdoors and with her beloved Boykin Spaniel dogs. The dog that won't rock the boat. So here's my interview with Alicia O'Dell. Be sure to check her out. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish six beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Alicia O'Dell, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Well, this is really going to be a fun one. As I've said to you before we got on the air, been looking forward to this meeting with you, and we have not met personally before, and it's nice to meet you. But you and I share a lot of interests, and so I think this is going to be a fun conversation. Alicia, you have an interesting background, and I want my guests to hear about you. I know that you and I share an experience in Tennessee State Parks, but it's more than that. You have an educational background in environmental education and that sort of thing. Tell us about yourself, where you grew up, your background, and how you got interested in parks and conservation.
Well, I grew up in Decatur County along the Tennessee River, and I loved going anywhere with my dad, whether it was the ponies or fishing at a pond or just hiking in the woods. And one day I saw a turtle shell, just the shell, and I picked it up and was looking at it, and I was probably fifth grade, and I told my dad, I said, you know, I want to be a vet, but I think maybe there's somebody that takes care of the wild animals. And around the eighth grade, we went to vacation at Fall Creek Falls, and he said, hey, Alicia, do you know who lives in that house across the lake from the inn and restaurant? I said, no, I don't know, Dad. And he said, well, that's where the park ranger lives.
Right.
So from the eighth grade on, I knew I wanted to be a park ranger.
To school, to study in a related field?
Yes. I ended up going to UT Martin. Okay. We had a career day booth, which I want to, you know, give a shout out to everyone that helps with those career days in high school, because it was a major influence on me. I asked them, What college would be best to go into wildlife biology? Would it be Knoxville? And actually, the Knoxville booth said, you need to go talk to Martin. They have a
Or
wonderful
Tennessee
ag
Tech, yeah,
program.
either, yeah. And when you were there, was you were in wildlife management? Is that
I was in wildlife biology. So Phil Lavely was there with Park and Rec at the time, but that was his last tenure. The last, about when I graduated, was he was retiring. And I had Skip Shelton in wildlife biology.
Well, that's just fun. As you well know, we have a lot of rangers and park managers that are graduates of that UT Martin program. And
Yes.
yeah,
Very
because it,
thankful for everything that Martin does and the outreach that they do.
well, it's the professors there, excuse me. The professors there at the time maintained real close connections with parks and with the professionals in the parks. So I mean, they knew what they were doing, and they knew how to coach their students into the summer jobs that get you in, right?
Right, Dr. Pitts was on ornithology, and he would take us to Real Foot Lake to do field trips and birding, and even his backyard. Just wonderful professors that they have.
So, what was your first job in state parks?
My first job was renting paddle boats out of Natchez Trace State Park at Cub Lake. So I worked 3 summers there. I did a summer as a lifeguard in Dresden, Tennessee, so I could take summer classes 1 year. And then I went to Indiana State Parks, and I was a naturalist at a state park in Indiana.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
That's really a great experience, huh?
It was.
So then you came to back to work at Real Foot Lake. Is that
I came back to work with the SIR program, the Seasonal Ranger Interpretive program. Charlie Norville was hiring for West Tennessee at the time, and I contacted him, sent him my resume, and I ended up going back to Natchez Trace, where I had worked at the boat dock because the Rangers knew me there, and that was my hometown. So I went back to Natchez as an SIR, and then I worked at Nathan Bedford Forest at the Folklife Museum.
Oh, up on top of the hill. That is
Yes.
that at Pilot Knob. That is a treasure in the Tennessee State Park system. That Pilot
It
Knob museum. Tell us about that. Tell my listeners about that.
is. The Pilot Knob Museum is a cultural history museum that great men, really, of the time, Bobby Fulcher and Fro Schauer, they worked to get exhibits together on cultural history. My favorite, there's many, many good exhibits in that museum. My favorite one is Maggie Lee Sarah, I think is how you say it. She was a photographer, but she was deaf, and her dad got her a camera after she came back from the school of deaf. And she went and took pictures of the Tennessee River and the boatmen and the fishermen along the Tennessee River. And they lived in a boathouse. I just love the story.
I think, and I may be wrong about it, but my recollection is that little museum opened in 1986 and was kind of a homecoming 86 sort of project, so to speak. And that was during my tenure as parks director. So I remember when that museum opened, and what a tremendous thing it really was. And Bobby Fulcher was one of my early interviews on this podcast. So for people that are interested in folk life, that is the man. So
He
yeah.
is a treasure, Tennessee treasure. He sure is.
So tell us, you ended up being the area manager for Real Foot Lake State Park.
Yes,
which
sir.
is an extraordinarily significant park and a big time challenge to be in that leadership position there. And how long were you there at Real Foot?
A little over a decade, about 11 years.
Yeah.
When I interviewed for the position, Mike Robertson was the new director. He hadn't been in too long,
Right.
and he had one area manager, Chris Padgett. And at the interview with him and Jeff Wells, all three of them, they really focused on my outdoor classroom that I did at Natchez Trace. I was a ranger there for 15, 16 years
Okay.
before I was promoted, and I did an outdoor classroom every week on Thursdays for homeschoolers. And we averaged between 50 and 100 in attendance. So
Wow.
we ended up
Oh, that's right, with the
representing.
homes with the homeschool folks. That's right. Right.
Yes, the homeschoolers. And it was really a socialization time for them, but also a learning time. We would do a program, a picnic, and a playtime for them.
So then you were talking about your interview with Mike being hired to be the manager at Real Foot.
Yes, and they knew I excelled at the interpretation and the education with children, which Real Foot, it's a high interpretive park that they do a lot of outreach for education, environmental outreach with programming there. So they knew that I had that niche, but I pulled out a budget that my secretary, Miss Gail Blankenship, had printed off for me, and I told him, I said, "See, I've got a budget here, Real Foot, and I've looked it over, and I think we could do this, this, and this." And Chris Padgett just got a big smile on his face. I'll never forget it. And he was like, "Oh, she can budget, and she can, be an interpreter,
Well, that's
educator."
what it
So.
takes to be a park manager. It's a really highly responsible job, and a lot of behind the scenes work that people never see, but is important. As I have traveled around, I'm constantly amazed at the Tennessee, born and bred Tennesseans who have never been to the Smokies or who have never been to Real Foot Lake. And it boggles my mind because these are two national treasures.
Sometimes the ones that visit them the least are the locals. It's hard to understand.
Well, that is interesting. So tell us, why is it that every Tennessean ought to have the experience of a visit to Real Foot Lake?
I would say everyone would expect me to say the Eagles or something like that, the duck hunting, really, like, the duck hunting, the fishing, it's a sportsman's paradise.
Right.
And those are all great things. But for me personally, it was the cultural history. It was how these people have lived, supported their families, and survived for generations, through the lake. And even today, they're surviving and supporting their family and their community through tourism, through fishing and guiding the duck hunting. There used to be the commercial fishing there too. So just a very unique ecosystem, with it being a wetland that looks like Louisiana, but it's in Northwest Tennessee, and it was torn
Right.
by an earthquake. It's just the
Right.
complete package.
Right. It's an interesting thing. You drive, if you're coming from Nashville, going to Real Foot Lake, you're driving across really flat lands, flat farmlands, soybean fields, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, you encounter all these cypress trees, and it's an otherworldly sort of experience to see, isn't it?
Is. I told them that we needed new pontoon boats. They had been redoing the flooring and the roof and everything on these pontoon boats. It dated back to the 70s and 80s. I got there in 2013, so you can imagine the shape they were in. And I said, if we can't get the public out on this lake, they don't know why it's important to preserve it. So that was a really big initiative my first year, was to replace all three pontoon boats, and with the support of the director, and the area managers, we were able to get that done.
Right. So now you have left Parks and you are embarking on a post Parks and Recreation career, and part of that is kind of a robust entry into the social media world. You've launched a podcast, a blog. You're active on Instagram and Facebook, and it adds also a dimension that we haven't mentioned yet, and that has to do with your Boykin Spaniels.
Yes,
So,
sir.
tell us about what you're doing with your blog and your podcast, and what your goals are there.
Well, in 2016, I had a challenging time in my personal life, and I got a little puppy, and that puppy was Teal. Teal has introduced me to so many new friends in the hunting world, the hunting retriever world. I've traveled with her, to all the states surrounding us, plus farther to like South Carolina, the home of the Boykin Spaniel. She's just taken me places and given me adventures that I would have never had. And I 100% say that this is a God thing. So where I'm going, and people will wish me luck in the last few months and say, hey, good luck with whatever you're trying to do. And honestly, I don't know what I'm trying to do, but I think God's always had me and he's always going to have me. So as I go forward into the podcast, the website that I've built, it's just gonna be a God thing. If I feel in my heart to sit down and talk about Cranetown at Real Foot, then I'll do that. And if I feel in my heart that I should talk about Boykin Spaniels and the health testing and how important that is, then I'll sit down and do a podcast or an article about that. So I think it's just having something to do and feel productive and needed as we get closer to retirement.
Tell our listeners who don't know how they can find you on Facebook or on the podcast. What's the name of the podcast? Give us that whole rundown.
Well, the easiest way to get it all in one package is the website Boykins, the letter N, boat.com.
Okay.
And they'll have the link to my podcast, which is Wild Hearts and Home Fires.
Right, Wild Hearts and Home
Wild Hearts and
Fires.
Home Fires. I've done three episodes, so I'm still learning very
Right,
much.
right.
But the website I've had, probably up and going since 2021, I created it with my first litter of Boykin Spaniel puppies.
Okay.
So the revenue portion and the passion goes back to the Boykin Spaniels and all of this. And the podcast and the blog is just something from my heart that I want to share. And especially the stories of Real Foot, I don't want those to get lost. I tried so hard to pass them down to the Rangers as we hired new Rangers, but as it's a very fluid field. So they might be at Real Foot and then they might go to Radnor Lake.
Right, right.
So I just thought, well, these stories are important and they need to be wrote down somewhere.
Right. Well, that's part of what I do with this podcast is to interview people and get their recollections. We mentioned Bobby Fulcher earlier, but I also did an interview last couple of years ago with Charlie Tate. And I'm sure remember Charlie, and got some of his recollections about how the recreational services part of Parks, got going, and
Yes.
his long history in that. So, let me tell you a story.
Okay.
It was about 82 or 83. I was working in central office there at what was then called the Department of Conservation. And the department commissioner's office gets a copy of the conservation publication from each of the other states. So Tennessee publishes the Tennessee Conservationist, and
Yes.
just about every other state has a similar kind of publication. And there's a reciprocal thing. Tennessee sends one to each of the other states, and then gets one from each of the other states that do it. Some of them are monthly, some of them are quarterly, and some states don't have anything like that at all. But one year I was doing the mail, I guess, in the commissioner's office, and in comes South Carolina Wildlife Magazine, which is a beautiful magazine, with a beautiful Boykin Spaniel on the front cover of the magazine. Of course, you know that the Boykin Spaniel is the state dog of the state of South Carolina.
Yes.
Of course, I didn't know there was anybody had a thing like a state dog. But South Carolina does. I think Tennessee does too. I can't remember what, blue tick coonhound maybe.
Probably so. I think that's right.
But anyway, South Carolina's is the Boykin Spaniel. And, folks, if you're listening and you don't know what a Boykin Spaniel is, just get on Google and an image search, and you'll see a lot of pictures of cute chocolate brown spaniel dogs. At that time, I decided I want to have one of these.
Oh,
And
wow.
my wife and I were moving into a new house, and we were out of an apartment, and we were going to be able to have a dog, because we both had been in graduate school and hadn't been able to do anything like that. So had a friend who was from Aiken, South Carolina, and his father was a postman there. In the fashion of walking the streets of the house and depositing the mail at each home. And he knew what was going on in Aiken, South Carolina, and knew about a litter of Boykin Spaniel puppies, and he brought me one. And
Oh.
that was Corey. That was our first Boykin Spaniel. And she was a terrific little dog. Just a sweet dog, and a very really interested in retrieving, loved and was energized by the sound of a gun going off.
Yes.
Not that I'm a big hunter, but I loved to do the training with the dogs. We had her for about 11 years. She had one litter of puppies, and we kept one of those litter of that litter, who was Abe. So we had for many years the two of them, and we just loved our Boykin Spaniels. Now those dogs, as nature is, they passed away, and then we've ultimately got another dog named Otis. And drove down to South Carolina to pick Otis up. But
Oh, wow.
these were in the days before the Boykin Spaniel was an AKC breed. So if you bought a Boykin Spaniel and you had it registered, it was with the Boykin Spaniel Society, which is a private thing. And at the time, they were very reluctant to associate with AKC, because they didn't want the breed ruined by people breeding it for confirmation, breeding them for confirmation and not for workability. So that's my experience with Boykins. We've had three, and we would have others, except we're doing too much traveling right now, and getting older, so it's not the best thing to have a dog. But so you have, as I've read in your blogs, invested yourself in the Boykin Spaniel Society and in that whole culture. So Tell our listeners about that.
The Boykin Spaniel Society, when I was first hearing about it, my mentor and best friend Leslie Ballard owns the mill that sired Teal. And Leslie said, "Leisha, imagine men in tweed coats and ladies in dresses and an oyster roast." And I thought, "Oh, sounds nice to me." And she said, "Now imagine on a southern plantation style home or hunting grounds. And after you get to run your dogs, whether it is, the fun event of the hot dog retrieve, like they have for the rescue pups and non-hunting dogs, they have events for them, like a hot dog retrieve, who can retrieve the hot dog without eating it." So funny. Then she said they'll also have an upland event on Sunday, and then they'll have, like a championship of the best Boykin at each level, whether it's puppy, started, intermediate, which is like the mid level, or the finish level. She said, and then they have an awards night and a silent auction, and all the fundraising goes to support the Boykin Spaniels that are rescued. Or maybe they need medical surgeries. Maybe they were unfortunate in the way they were bred, and they didn't do the health testings, and they ended up in a rescue. She said there's all sorts of different reasons, just like every breed, to help the rescue dogs. So I was just really jaw dropped at her description of this event, and I didn't go my first years when Till was, 1 and 2 years old. I waited until Leslie and Mr. Charles Shelton told me about the Boykin Whisperer, Phil Hinchman up in Indiana. And I was so new to it that we have got a wealth of trainers here, right here at home with me, my neighbors, very talented dog trainers. But I knew that Phil only specialized in Boykin Spaniels. And at the time, like you said, there wasn't a lot.
Right.
So Phil got her trained to retrieve and at the started level. And she went and ran what's called novice at nationals. And she went ran so well that she earned a JAM award. And that's with me running her instead of the trainer. So that really shows that a Boykin Spaniel with a good bloodline can retrieve.
Right.
And I always heard, like, oh, Boykins can't retrieve a duck, or if they do, they're not going to get to the finish level, or they can't bring back a goose, it's too big and they're too little. Well, she did all of that, plus swam in the Mississippi
Right.
River. So it was just a fun time for me in my life. I was a single mom with my daughter, and me and my daughter and my dog, we just traveled everywhere and tried to check off the list of what they said she couldn't do.
Right,
So,
right. Now you have set up a kennel now, and so you are, is this a business type of operation, or what, how do you think about that?
it's definitely a passion of the heart.
Okay,
Teal had
okay.
three litters, and then I had her spayed because she's also my best friend. And I really didn't make revenue off of any of that because you have to buy all the supplies. She
Right.
had three C-sections. Her first one was an emergency, and then the next two litters, I wasn't dare going to let her have an
Right.
emergency again.
Right.
So I made a little bit of profit on that third litter, but it was really last year I probably made my first revenue, and that's 4 litters in, and that was out of her daughter. And I only do one litter a year, and I think 1 year I even skipped and didn't do a litter. So
Right, right.
we're not a big kennel. We're just a very respected kennel in the Boykin world.
Right,
We do the
right.
health testing from the time they're pups. We look at their hips. We do the DNA testing. We make sure we know the male has been tested and the female has been tested, and we know their DNA and that they're going to produce a healthy litter of pups.
Right. So it's a business, but it's but more something about the heart.
It is. It is
Yeah,
something
yeah.
about the heart. I'm hoping that my career, even in retirement, is going to financially support me. And this is a labor of love, just like, the podcast and the blog, I would say.
When I first got a Boykin Spaniel in 1983, I think I paid maybe $200 for this
Oh,
pup.
wow.
Yeah. And I told you that we had a litter here, and these were not by any means champion dogs, but they were purebred
Yes.
Boykins, some with foundation stock
Oh, that's
pedigree.
good.
So, but now these dogs are hugely expensive.
Yes, sir. They can be. Now you can find someone out there that may be new to breeding or new to the Boykin Spaniels, and they may be on a learning curve. And I dare say that's how I got Teal, because I didn't pay for Teal what I'm charging for these pups, but that was 9 years ago. And a gentleman that's very well respected in the Boykin world, but he was starting a venture of his own, a new kennel. So he was on the breaking grounds of his new business. And now, if you send a spaniel off to be trained, the trainer that I use, his stud, it's 900 a month. When Teal went through her training to a trainer, it was 600 a month. So that was basically my house payment.
Wow. Wow.
If you look at it on your budget line, like, oh, that's the
Right.
same as my house payment.
Right. But in terms of business for your kennel, if you have dogs that have demonstrated ability, those dogs are going to be worth more.
If you have a bloodline that is proven, like
Right.
the sire that I used, he is a finished level retriever. He's been to the master's level and got his master's, and he also competes against labs, which labs just do it on automatic.
Right.
They're not spaniels. So for him to be able to run, at the master's level against labs, that's huge. And
Right.
for Teal to be able to be a finished level retriever, proven hunting at real foot in the swamps, and then being run by me, an amateur, I'm not a professional. So
Right.
that's that proven bloodline that they look for.
Right. Well, that's a fun thing. I think is it Stephen Colbert that has a Boykin Spaniel?
Is he on the news or a night show? I
He's
think you're right.
the night guy, right. He has
Yes,
the night
he
show, Stephen
does.
Colbert.
He's so proud of it too.
And it's a great looking little dog. And well behaved and obviously sweet. And he dotes over that dog. So if you're a listener and you've seen Stephen Colbert with his little dog, in fact, you should look for that because you'll be able to see what a cute dog these guys. And they make great house pets as well as hunting dogs. Is that your opinion or your
Yes, they have
experience?
a great on-off switch.
Yeah.
The female that we've bred last month, I'll see if she's pregnant in a week, but she's my husband's dog, and she just cuddles. I mean, all night she's in his lap getting pets and rubs. So just a great on-off switch that they have. They're known as the dog that won't rock the boat, and that's why they bred them to be a smaller dog. And then bob the tail so that they wouldn't be slashing that tail, getting water everywhere, and they would be able to fit in a small hunting boat.
Have you ever taken your Boykins to the ocean?
Oh, I
Yeah.
have.
I'm going to let you go first. You tell us the experience.
Well, it was Teal that went, my original Boykin, and she just loved running up and down the beach, and she would go into the waves and then run back out.
Right.
And of course, a lot of times, unless you're at a dog beach, you have to have, her harness on her and her collar and everything like that. Can't really let her run free, but she had a blast.
Our little Otis would at for about the first 5 minutes, he was a little bit shy about the waves.
Yes.
And then after that, he was out there riding those waves in. And he would go out probably, 20 yards and then ride the waves in. He seemed to go to it naturally. The only problem with taking a Boykin Spaniel to the beach too was he tended to like the salt water. And he would lap it up, and we had to take him to the vet at when we got home because he had ruined his the whatever the flora is in his gut
Oh.
was had to be recharged because the salt water had really done a number on him.
I
But
was lucky enough that someone commented on Facebook, be careful with the ocean water. And I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, this little dog couldn't get enough of it, man. He just loved that salty taste. And dogs are like that. That's what they'll do. But so let's get off the Boykins for just a second. Let's talk about environmental education and women in the out of doors. I know those are subjects which you're interested in.
Well, I first began being interested in that when the Wild Turkey Federation had a Women of the Outdoors program. And I forgive me if I'm saying it wrong, but a lady came up to me. She was based out of Jackson, Tennessee. And she said, as a young ranger, she said, Alicia, could you help us put together, an event for these ladies to come out here and shoot at the firing range? Maybe fish or canoe. And I said, oh, that would be fabulous. My son was a year old. I've got pictures of him out there on the firing range with his little earmuffs and with the ladies and his little turkey shirt. And then after that, I'd already been doing outdoor camps for children. But then I thought, well, why don't we have like campfire cooking for ladies or, like a night inside with crafts or something, just to get them exposed more to the outdoors. So
Those were programs that you developed there at Real Foot.
those were at Natchez Trace as
At
a
Natchez Trace, okay.
young ranger. And then when I went to Real Foot, I worked to get together a Women of the Outdoors there, and they actually camped at Caney Island. And I have to give a shout out to my team, Vanessa Henson and all the seasonal rangers and the rangers there. They did rotations for the ladies, and then at the end of the night, they got on a pontoon boat, did photography, and then they went out to this island on Real Foot. It's called Caney Island, and we had mowed it. The staff had, and the ladies just set up their tents. And they spent the night out there on Caney Island, which is very brave. If you can imagine camping on a remote island at Real Foot, it was very brave of them.
There would be a lot of noises that you weren't used to hearing at night, that's for sure.
A lot of noises, maybe a water snake, sunning as the sun went down. They were very brave ladies, but they had a great time. They ended up kayaking down at the refuge and the lily pads during the day and seeing the owls and the hawks and the eagles. They did that tour. So they just had a great time. But we did that probably once a year. It just sort of took off like the other events, because once you start an event, it's hard not to do it. You have that expectation from then on that you need to be doing that.
Do you think you're going to be doing any of that kind of programming as time goes forward, offering those sorts of programs?
I might look into it. I really enjoy taking my XL boat and doing photography tours. So I might look into something like that. Also, they have a seasonal program, And I'm not fully retired right now. I'm working as at Dyersburg State Campus Police. But
Okay.
after I fully retire, then I may look into that seasonal program because as a retiree, you can still work so many hours with the state.
Right.
And maybe just volunteer or, share anything I've learned with the younger generation.
Right. Well, there's a real need for folks to do those kind of that kind of leadership. So I certainly would encourage you to do that. We're not going to find someone with your not knowledge and background just off the shelf. That just doesn't happen.
Well,
So,
thank you. I
yeah.
am very interested in helping, and learning about different groups out there too. I was thinking, in the last few weeks, I've been spinning my mind in different direction. I was like, well, I could look into these, the World Ranger Association, the Thin Green Line sisterhood that I started, or the TRPA, just all sorts of different ways that we can serve.
You have grown up in the parks, and you have children that have grown up in the parks. This program is about leadership in parks and recreation, and the people that are involved in conservation and recreation, and their lives are different in a lot of ways than average people. I was talking to somebody the other day about. There's no expectation whatsoever that you're going to have a day off on the 4th of July or on any of the national holidays. It's an expectation that you're going to be working those days. And so that's just one thing that is unique to the park and recreation field. But in state parks, at least back in some days, rangers and park managers lived on the properties, and not so much anymore. But many children were raised in these rangers' residences and park managers' residences. And you have two. Tell us about that.
Well, it was an hour and 15-minute bus ride when they were little to the local elementary school. And as a kindergarten, it's really hard to hold a bladder for that long after a full day of school. So I ended up homeschooling both my children and doing the outdoor classroom at Natchez Trace. We would do science with a nature journal or a field trip to Graceland or the zoo. So they had a very interactive, hopefully full childhood where they had, interaction with other children at the outdoor classroom and church. And then they also had that, they learned the passion for the outdoors, hopefully just by living and growing up on the state park. We lived at Cub Lake at Natchez Trace, and then I lived in an apartment connected to the museum. So when my daughter was 10 and 11 years old, she was going in there, and we had just started the Edison online reservation program, and one of our clerks was struggling, so she was saying, "Raylan, come over here and help me." At 10 years old, Raylan would run over to the cash register and, say, "Well, here you go, Miss So and So," and she would make the reservations for her at 10 years old, trying
This
to.
was at this was at
Real
at
foot.
at Real Foot. Okay.
That was at Real Foot because we lived in the apartment that was attached to the museum.
Okay.
So Raylan would just run in there and, onboard, one of the clerks in the gift shop to help her figure out how to operate the computer. It was so new. And she would also say, "I'm going to go give this family a tour of the boardwalk, Mom." Or she'd tell Vanessa, "I'm going to go give them a snake tour of the boardwalk." And she would take people around the boardwalk and say, "Well, this is a water snake," or, "No, that's a cottonmouth. It's not a, broadband water snake." And she would just go crazy identifying snakes. So.
And so those you have a son and a daughter is my observation, and
Yes.
both are park rangers.
Both are. My son ended up doing internships. They both went to UT Martin.
Okay.
He majored in wildlife biology, and she majored in park and rec. He went off to Alaska to study the waterfowl migration,
Wow.
came back to Illinois and studied the Mississippi Flyway, and then he went out to Wyoming and studied grouse out in Wyoming. And then he had an opportunity to come back and get on with Tennessee State Parks full time.
And he's at Pickwick Landing.
He is. He's
Yeah,
at
right.
Pickwick Landing, and she is at Henry Horton State
At Henry
Park.
Horton, right. Well, I know you got to be proud of them.
I am beyond proud.
Yeah.
This ice storm hit Pickwick, and they just got electricity back yesterday, he said. So,
Oh wow.
oh
I
wow,
did
yes.
hear that Pickwick apparently the entrance way, the drive that goes into the lodge was impassable for a period of time.
It was.
Yeah.
He was, along with the other rangers, they were stuck inside the park for at least 4 to 5 days. So they cut a path to the shop to get firewood and bottled water and a heater and a generator for each house. There's 4 houses. So they cut their way through all on their own and survived for 4 days, maybe 5 days, until they could get the contractors in there. Because the wires were still hot.
Right.
So, and this is not just at Pickwick. I want to give a shout out to rangers across the whole state. I
Right,
don't,
exactly.
that all the
Montgomery Bell
rangers are
got a
dealing
big
with
time
this.
hit with this ice storm as well, as my it's what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Were there guests at the lodge at Pickwick?
The way he was talking to me, I think he said that they all left or got out before the
Okay.
storm hit,
Wow.
because he was thinking there might be someone in the cabins, but I believe he, when he went and checked, that they had already left before the storm hit.
Well, that's a good thing. Absolutely.
Yes, that would have been devastating
Yeah.
trying to get to the public.
Well, Alicia, as we wind up, I want you to I'm going to give you another opportunity to give our listeners the rundown on how to find you on social media so that they can follow up and listen to then sign up to listen to your various programs. I will note that you've just had a podcast for 2 or 3 weeks and you've already podcasts. I mean, you've done a bunch. I don't, and so there's a lot out there to listen to, and they're interesting.
Well,
I
thank you
want
so
let me Let me
much.
ask you this before I lose the thought. Do you intend to have guests on your podcast?
I do. I do. I had someone reach out to me today, and he would like to hear a segment on forestry and clear cutting. And I said, well, hey, why don't you be my guest? So he's excited about that. He cuts firewood for a living and lives in Decatur County. So he's excited, I think.
Well, I'd encourage you to do that. It let me just tell you, as I cannot imagine sitting in front of the microphone and talking for 30 or 40 minutes, just a stream of conscious or even with an outline. It's an interview is always going to be more fun and interesting, I think. That's my
Yes,
thought
sir.
on
And
the
I'm going to
thing.
run out of stories. So there's
Well, there
only
you
so many
go. You
stories.
might want to save some of those back, Alicia, just so that you'll have some.
Yes,
Just
sir.
teasing.
And I need
Just teasing.
to see your setup one day too and learn from the best.
Well, certainly if you come into town, I'd love to show you how I do this. I don't have a schedule on mine. When I first got started, I felt like I needed to do 1 or 2 a month. And I just don't have that compulsion. To do that at this point in time. So now, if I get one done in a month, that's okay. And if I have to go on vacation or want to go on vacation, that's fine too. Anyway, tell our listeners how they can find you on social media so that they can make sure to listen to to your podcast?
Well, I'm on all platforms right now. The most that I'm posting right now is TikTok, and I'll make my creation for my short reels. And then I'll share it to Facebook, and Facebook automatically shares it to my Instagram.
Right.
And it was recommended to keep everything under one name. So everything is under Boykins, the letter N, Boat on every platform, except my podcast, Wild Hearts and Home Fires. But you can find it on the website or any of the other. If you
Right.
forget the name, Wild
Right.
Hearts and Home Fires, you'll see it on my social media post.
Right. And I found that on Apple Podcasts very easily. It was right there, and the graphics of it are nice, and so people can find that by just, if you go on Apple Podcast, you can just search that for that podcast.
You'll see me holding Till and my ponytail from the back and her face over my shoulder. That was actually a hunting trip in Rice Field in Mississippi. So the
Excellent.
Delta Bottoms.
Excellent. Alicia, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been just a real thrill to talk with you.
Well, thank you, and maybe one day you can meet my Boykin Spaniels.
Oh, I'm going to drive out there and do it. Absolutely.